The Theuba Prophecy, an abduction to the ninth planet, with special guest Samuel Chung. Episode 60 of the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters Podcast, live edition.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters Podcast, where we explore the unexplained and mysterious phenomena that have occurred throughout the state of Michigan and beyond.
From UFO sightings to ghostly encounters, we delve deep into the stories, the evidence, and the theories behind these strange events.
We are your hosts. I'm Michelle.
And I'm Wayne.
We are an educator duo that, after an encounter with a triangular UFO in 2018 in Michigan, we decided to investigate UFOs and the paranormal. In this podcast, we will be speaking with eyewitnesses, experts, and researchers to uncover the truth about some of the most intriguing cases of paranormal activity in and around Michigan.
Our goal is not to convince anyone of the existence of these phenomena, but rather to provide a platform for discussion and exploration. So, buckle up and join us on this journey down the paranormal rabbit hole.
On an escalator.
And we are live. Welcome, everybody.
Hello, everyone.
to the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters Podcast, episode 60. And it is the 1st of July, 2023 at the time of this recording. And we are currently streaming on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. Now, after the airing of this live stream, you will be able to hear any of our shows, including this one on iHeartRadio, iTunes, Radio Public, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, and many others. However, we just received word that Stitcher is shutting down on August 29th, 2023. So if you listen to podcasts on Stitcher or the Stitcher app, you may want to find a new podcast platform to listen to your favorite podcast. So yeah, that was interesting news to get in the email today. So also wanted to take a quick minute to thank everybody that sent positive energies and prayers to our friend Jared Murphy, the author of It's Not Aliens Worse, It's Us. He is home and recovering from the medical condition that he dealt with, which was very scary. I was able to talk to him briefly, and he's in physical therapy a few days a week now and working on getting his strength back. So once again, we want to thank everyone for the kind prayers and thoughts that were sent to Jared. More to come as Jared recovers.
So we're going to give some quick hellos to the chat before we have Samuel Chung join us. We've got Tabin R with us tonight. We've got Honey Bitter, and Barry has joined us so far. And I have a feeling we have some quiet folks in there who haven't just jumped in yet.
Yeah, and it doesn't tell us like who's watching and listening on Facebook and things either. So everybody, thank you for joining us. And once again, you'll be able to hear this. So as always, when we do our live situations here, our live shows, we like to get questions from the audience. So if you do have questions for Samuel, please put them in all caps and we'll try to get to your questions. We're going to start limiting the questions that we're going to start taking till after the breaks. So that way, you know, you can put the questions in the chat right after we come back from break, and we'll have that whole second segment of the podcast for your questions and our guests to respond.
No, just remember, you know, we want to say that this live show and the podcast happens because of all of you guys and your amazing support. So if you want to help support the podcast, the links are below in the show description with our PayPal, Patreon, Linktree, that will take you to other ways to support the podcast. But one of the best ways that you can support this live edition is to like, share, and subscribe. So the more subscribers and support we have, the more incredible content that we can bring you.
Yep. So we also need to give a couple shout outs again tonight for people doing their continued support of the show. We have Hava H for her continued support. And then we have our Patreon members, Tabin R and Cheryl G. Thank you for your continued support.
So, and with this edition tonight, we have brought back the news section and communication corner, the listener emails and stories back to the podcast, but they're added to the audio podcast afterwards.
Correct.
So we're doing things this way so that we can maximize time with our guests and also spend time with the news stories and the emails that we get from listeners. So make sure that you sign up for the audio podcast, go check them out on whatever your favorite podcast platform is, and listen for those news sections and listener communications. Hello, Lisa. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, Lisa, we see you there. Thanks for coming by and checking out the show tonight. So very happy to see you. Yeah, so one quick thing about what we're doing with the news shows and the emails. We are getting emails from people, and we are we want to still share those emails, but we don't want to eat up time with our guest. So what I'm doing is taking the emails and the news articles, we are pre-recording those, and then I'm dropping that audio file into the audio file of this live show so that we still will now have, you know, a news section and things like that. So I see Not Sure has joined the chat. So welcome, Not Sure. Good seeing you. All right, Michelle, it's time for the audio podcast extras, where we got our communication corner and we bring the news back. So what do you want to start with?
Well, I would say that we take a look at a couple of these emails that we've received. So I'm going to go ahead and start right in. It says, hello, I am a former naval aviator and afterwards an airline pilot for over 30 years. I was then a police officer for 5 years at the end of my working life. I am, I guess you could say, a trained observer. I have seen meteorites and comets and all kinds of cloud formations. St. Elmo's fire dancing on many a window and sometimes on the airframe. I cannot imagine there is much more that I have not seen in the air. On the night of the 16th April of this year, my wife and I were sitting on our deck in Port Charlotte, Florida.
And by the way, the year is 2023.
Yes, so this is this year. It was a crisp and clean night after a frontal passage. The sky was bright and filled with stars. The blue sky effect was at a minimum from where we were seated. It was approximately 10:25 to 10:30. When an object passed fairly close to overhead our patio from west toward the northeast. It was dead silent and ethereal in nature, almost opaque but with an eerie iridescent leading edge with very subdued puck-type lights, maybe 8 or 10 all along that leading edge. There were two leading edges and absolutely no running lights. The craft in the daylight would not have been observable due to the ghost-like quality of the entire structure, or rather, lack of structure. Absolutely silent. It was a quiet night. No ambient noise to mask turbine engine noise at all. The speed was estimated at about 250 to 300 miles per hour. Later analysis indicated almost 2 times that speed. I submitted my report to MUFON and was advised indirectly by the state director that it was a B-2 landing at MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa. My house is about 67 to 70 miles from the runway. If it was a B-2, then they must have had a stealth mode that does not produce any engine noise and a Romulan warbird cloaking system.
Good old Star Trek.
Yeah, I have no idea if you can help me, but if this was a B-2, It was in violation of every regulation for operation over civilian airspace at low altitude. And aren't B-2s like really noisy?
They are noisy, but very easily to identify. And they're not going to be ethereal in nature.
Well, and would they fly a B-2 at night?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. That's what they do. They're stealth bombers and painted black for a reason. You know, if he's 70 miles away from the airport, the thing's not going to be flying overhead that low and that fast.
Well, he came in with a second email to kind of clarify.
Yeah.
You know, he had left out was the size. He said that he was so visually excited, and we get that I am not sure, but afterwards, both of us thought like a small airliner, like a 737 roughly in size. The dead silent nature of this encounter still haunts both of them to this day.
Yep. And then he says, I would very much like to know what I may have seen.
So anybody in Port Charlotte, Florida, who's listening that this year,
yep,
in April, if you saw anything in your backyard at night, just happened to, you know, be sitting by a nice little campfire or anything.
Yeah. If anybody saw anything, reach out to us at mi.ufo.podcast@gmail.com.
We would love to get back with our friend Mark to let him know that he's not alone in seeing what both he and his wife saw.
And, you know, it's always great to have other eyes that might have witnessed the same thing to get a better picture, because he did draw everything out. And I think that was a function of MUFON to have you draw a picture and label stuff. And he did send it to us. And my only, I guess, suggestion at this point was that it sounds like it was a triangle encounter. Very, very different type of triangle. I mean, it did look like a large wing, but it was moving very fast.
Well, and what he talked about with, you know, the one leading edge having the lights on it, but then the other two leading edges, I instantly thought triangle.
Well, and he says it was like the Romulan warbird cloaking system. It was blurred. So, to me, that sounds indicative of the whole black triangle type of craft situation. So, you know, if we got other people out there on the 16th of April of 2023 in Port Charlotte, Florida, that might have seen something around 10:30 p.m., definitely email us. Yeah, definitely email us. Speak out. Let's see if we can't get some people together here and start comparing notes. Once again, it was about April 16th, 2023 at about 10:25 p.m., 10:30 p.m., somewhere in there. A very large black triangular craft with about 8 lights on it. So, again, moving very fast. If you saw something, let us know.
Crazy stuff.
But, Michelle, I think it's that time.
It's time for What's in the News.
Yes, baby. What is in the news?
Oh, Lord. Oh. Well, from Newsweek, we've got the GOP congressman suggests UFOs may be ancient civilization.
Absolutely. This is from June 28th of 2023.
A Republican congressman has suggested that unidentified flying objects are UFOs. Could be an ancient civilization that is hiding on Earth but has only just begun to show itself. Mike Gallagher, a representative for Wisconsin and chair of the House Committee on the Chinese Communist Party, discussed various theories about the potential origins of alien sightings while appearing on the Pat McAfee show on Tuesday. There he spoke about the ongoing efforts of Congress to investigate claims that the government may be in possession of technology not from this world. House Oversight Committee Chair James Comer announced an investigation into allegations at the beginning of June. The alien probe was launched after various claims were made publicly by David Grush, a 36-year-old Air Force veteran who previously worked at the National Reconnaissance Office on what is now referred to as unidentified aerial phenomena. Grouch told News Nation after featuring in an article on the same subject in Debrief that the government had retrieved several non-human origin technical vehicles, some of which contained dead pilots. Appearing on the sports talk show, Gallagher suggested that one possible explanation of supposed UFO sightings was the so-called Terminator theory, based on the film of the same name, that aliens were actually human beings from the future. Wayne, chime in at any time. Another hypothesis, he said, was that as opposed to being us from the future, it could actually be an ancient civilization that's just been hiding here and is suddenly showing itself.
Well, we've heard that a bunch of times, though. This is nothing new. It's a legitimate hypothesis that, you know, these things have been here before man or might have had their hand in man's evolution. And so, you know, it's just one of the hypotheses that's out there. And let's continue on this and see where we're going.
Another member of the discussion then interjected, like Transformers, referencing the toy and film franchise.
Well, they get their information from somewhere. I mean, you do know, like, MUFON was selling people's stories to Hollywood and things, so
I bet
it's not that far-fetched.
Independence Day was probably Joe Schmo's story out there, and you know, look at how much money that made, in which a mechanized race of aliens seeks refuge on Earth from a civil war taking place on their own planet. In comic book literature, they are said to live for millions of years.
However, Gallagher said the worst case scenario would be if the reported sightings of craft that appeared to defy modern capabilities were actually advanced technology built by adversarial nations. He added that fears of potential Chinese weapons developments had been his entry point into the UFO discussion. Speaking about the investigation into the UFO claims, the congressman echoed remarks on Monday by GOP Senator from Florida, Marco Rubio, who said those coming forward to give testimony may have held very high clearances within the government but were fearful of their jobs for speaking out publicly.
Gallagher said he could not talk about who they are or the precise number of whistleblowers who had spoken in the investigation, but added that he had already been party to a variety of pretty intense conversations. A spokesperson for Representative Tim Burchett, a Republican congressman for Tennessee, who is one of the leaders of the investigation, previously told Newsweek that definitive hearing dates and witness lists had yet to be finalized, but that he wants this hearing to be done right with credible witnesses. Gallagher argued that it was important to destigmatize speaking out on the subject, as in the past, individuals such as fighter pilots who claim to have seen a UFO were getting ridiculed. The biggest source of resistance is just people are almost sort of embarrassed to talk about the topic, he said. They think they're going to be labeled a crazy, tinfoil hat, conspiracy theory, Looney Tunes person. So just by having these discussions out in the open, I think it goes a long way.
However, Gallagher added, most of the resistance is just from the bureaucracy in the Defense Department and the intelligence community. He claimed that five requests regarding UAPs he had made to U.S. intelligence agencies had yet to explicit a response. Newsweek approached the Department of Defense via email for comment on Wednesday. Both the Department of Defense and NASA have publicly stated that they have no evidence of extraterrestrial life or that government programs to reverse engineered alien technology exist. Dun, dun, dun.
People will have to go to Newsweek and like read the comment thread. I'm not going to get into that.
Yeah, no kidding.
That would be like my own little TikTok show or something.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Woo-hoo.
All right, Michelle, I think we're going to go ahead and jump back into our regular live show now and get going with our interview for Samuel Chung. What do you think?
Yeah, we need to get back to Samuel.
All right, everybody, we're going to go ahead and bow out. That was the news and communication corner, and we will see you back at the podcast. Thank you. All right, Michelle, why don't we go ahead and talk about Samuel's bio?
Okay, so, and remember, you're going to probably have to help me with the last name here again.
Okay.
So, Samuel is a certified court interpreter and Chinese translator. Samuel Chong was instrumental in arranging for the Chinese publication of the French author Michel
Demarque.
There we go. But The Oba Prophecy, which has been a bestseller in both China and Taiwan, a rare phenomenon. Mm-hmm. He visited the author Michel
Demarque
in 2016 and 2018 and had a close working relationship with him. He also translated the book 334 Lies, The Revelation of H.M.V. Stuhl. It's German.
German.
I took German in high school. An autobiography of the high master of the chair of a secret society that was started in Germany. Today, he dedicates his efforts in promoting the messages in these books in order to give people hope and to help promote a better world through his scholarship. So, and his website is found in our show description.
Correct.
So, Wayne, you want to finish that?
Yeah. So, he graduated from UC Berkeley with a BA in economics. I think that's Universidad Carlos III de Madrid with a master's in financial analysis. He currently resides in Los Angeles, California. So on this episode, he's going to describe his original life-changing encounter with Demarque's book, prompting him to make the journey twice to Vietnam in order to meet Demarque. This resulted in a close working relationship that eventually led to the Chinese publication. Demarque describes how he was abducted by very kind and attractive 8-foot-tall hermaphroditic humanoid aliens and taken to their advanced planet. The general, albeit not specific, features of Demarque's story, factually true or not, are consistent with many similar accounts by other supposed UFO contactees. Jeffrey Mishlove's introduction emphasizes this case as exemplary for exploring the boundary between the imaginary and the imaginal. So shows that Samuel has recently been on has been Coast to Coast AM, Jeffrey Mishlove's New Thinking Aloud, and many others. So without further ado, we want to bring on our guest tonight, Samuel Chong. Hi, Samuel.
Hi, Wayne.
Great seeing you. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Okay, so I have to start out with this because we did get the book. I started reading through it, and Michelle and I looked at each other and said, we can't read these books. We want to go into them just brand new. So how does somebody with your educational background, and maybe we can start with your childhood a little bit, with your educational background, your professionalism, you're an interpreter for Chinese citizens in LA, and financially you're all there together mentally. How does somebody get into finding this book and then deciding to translate it and help Demarque get his book out there for Chinese citizens?
Well, definitely this book is a unique book that contains a lot of specific verifiable information and facts that I later did a lot of research on. You know, in the last few weeks, people have been focusing the attention on the disclosure of David Grush, who says that he was involved in uncovering some of the crashed UFO spacecrafts or spacecrafts from ETs. But I think we should also focus on the spacecraft from the ETs that did not crash on Earth and will not crash on Earth because of their advanced technologies. And I think this book sheds light into some of the far more advanced technologies and civilizations in which the inhabitants, the ETs, have been visiting us in the past, as documented in the ancient scriptures in the Bible and other historical texts in other different cultures like India and China. Specifically, as the book was written in the late 80s, before the days of the internet, it contains a lot of information that the author, Michel de Marquet, a landscaper in Australia who didn't know how to type and who didn't know how to use a computer, had no way of knowing at that time. For example, it talks about the tomb of Jesus Christ in Shingo Village, Japan, that people can still visit nowadays and verify the information and the descriptions in the book. So it contains a lot of similar information and facts that people can look up nowadays and verify. I was fascinated because I always wanted to learn from the ETs, because if they can visit us, they must have advanced knowledge and technologies, and we can just learn from them to take the shortcut and to progress at a much faster pace. So that's my original idea.
Okay, very good. So what do you make? Let's just jump right into this. What do you make of David Grush coming forward with his information? Are these beings still visiting us? Are they here now?
I mean, of course, they have been visiting us. It's not just one kinds of ETs. There are many different species or different kinds of ETs that have been monitoring us and kind of as observants. But this specific kind of ET, as described by Michel de Marquet in the book The Oba Prophecy, is a kind that have been kind of taking the role as, I would say, mentors to us in the ancient past and until present day as well. So they have been assisting us behind the scenes and indirectly to help us to evolve on a more spiritual level versus the material level.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So these, is it Theubans?
Theubans or Theubans. Yes.
Okay. Where are they from exactly? And how do they travel? If talking about advanced technology, how are they able to do this?
Well, they are in our Milky Way galaxy for sure. And they can travel at a speed a few times faster than the speed of light. What they do is that they travel into deep space first at a speed a few times faster than the speed of light. And then they would use what they would call, what we would call teleportation, to immediately transfer themselves or teleport themselves into another space, like another location, immediately, almost instantaneously, also in deep space. And then they would again travel at a speed a few times faster than the speed of light to reach their destination. So this is how they're able to travel at such a long distance. The reason they have to do teleportation in deep space is that if they did that in our atmosphere or our space-time, then their spaceship would have been exploded. So they have to do that in deep space.
So the crashed craft that we are being told about that has been recovered, is this some of their craft, or is this a totally different species of aliens that are, you know, investigating us or, you know, coming to check us out?
I mean, the crashed ones probably are from a different ET species from this, the Theubans. Because, I mean, if they crash on Earth, that indicates that their technologies are not as far advanced as to prevent them from being from having this kind of accidents on Earth. So I would say some of them are probably from the Greys, who also come from Category 1 planet, the same category as ours. So even though they have advanced technologies, they are not that far advanced compared to the Theubans, as written in this book. And actually, Michel de Marquet was told by the Theubans that the Greys also come to visit us just to observe us and to see how we respond to our increasingly decreased immune system, because they are actually having the same problem and they're a dying race. And they actually put implants on some of us, about 150 people or so, by the year 1995, just to monitor us. But there is no harm done by them regarding their implants.
Why are they a dying race?
Because they have been losing their immune system, and they have similar issues that we are having right now. We have been losing our immune system since 1948, according to the telepathic message received by Michel de Marquet. And I think, they want to monitor us and to see how we respond to the same situation.
Interesting. So obviously there's other species of ET, what we would call ET, or, you know, citizen aliens in the galaxy. How different are they in technology levels, and how would they find us?
Well, they're very different physically and also technologically and also spiritually. And actually, the universe has deemed 9 different categories of planets based on their spiritual evolvement. And we are on category 1 planet, and the lowest category in the universe. The Theobans are on category 9 planet, the highest level. And further from category 9, that would be the Great Spirit, the Great Ether, the creator of the universe. So they can actually rejoin and rejoin the spirit, the creator of the universe, or what we would call God, who created everything, the planets, the stars, and animals, and plants, and human beings. The inhabitants of category 9 planets, they're highly evolved, both spiritually and technologically, and so they're able to know everything. They have the knowledge to visit us and to see how things are. And they actually, nowadays, especially in the last few decades or so, they can actually live among us without us knowing everything.
So I take it that if they're on a very advanced planet and they are very advanced humanoids or, you know, beings, they must be very spiritual. Is that what originally, like, when you found the book, what really drew you into learning about?
Well, in the very, very beginning, I was just focused on the technologies from the ETs, trying to see how we can get ahead of ourselves, the current state of the affairs. But then, what really struck me the most about the book was that it talks about the stories in the Bible. The chapter on who is Christ really made me couldn't put the book down because, you know, I was a non-believer of the Bible, or the stories in the Bible, because of so many inconsistencies and also the way that some of the Christians act in the past, like the Spanish Inquisition or something like that. So I was a non-believer of the Bible. And also I thought that what was the miracles performed by Jesus Christ were just too incredible and to be believed. But this book, Theobald Prophecy, explains everything what happened in the past, their involvement, regarding the destruction of the two cities, Sodom and Gomorrah, how they led Moses out of Egypt, leading the Hebrews out of Egypt, parting the Sea of Reeds, not the Red Sea, but the Sea of Reeds, and also the birth of Jesus and Christ, the coming of Christ. So that actually struck me the most because it made perfect sense how Christ was able to perform miracles and why there's no record of Jesus performing any miracles in the Bible before the age of 30.
Yeah, that is very interesting because you do hear people take ufology and UFOs and aliens and then they turn it from a nuts and bolts spacecraft technology type of idea, and they go to the demonic side, that all of these things are demonic, they're evil entities manipulating us and trying to feed off our energies and things like that from some other dimension. What is your response to people that believe something like that?
I mean, if the ETs are demonic or if they're going to invade us, they would have done that long time in the past, like decades ago, maybe hundreds of years ago, or thousands of years ago. They wouldn't have to wait now or sometime in the future. If they want to get our resources, if they can actually travel to visit us, they wouldn't need our resources anymore. We, to them, are just like primates in the zoo, like monkeys or gorillas. Do you see the human beings like us fighting the resources against the gorillas or monkeys and grabbing their bananas away from them? You wouldn't, because we can grow bananas ourselves. We wouldn't want to get bananas from the monkeys or the gorillas. And similarly, the ETs that can visit us, they have their own ways to get enough sufficient resources on their own. They wouldn't want to invade us to get our resources or even to enslave us. I mean, if you think about this, people talk about the secret space programs like ETs enslaving people. We actually haven't been on the moon for 50 years for a very good reason, because we were warned out from the moon. We went to the moon, but we were warned out from the moon by the ETs because we are not ready. We were not ready, and we are not ready. The people who are allowed to explore the universe are the ones who are highly evolved, at least to a certain level spiritually, so that they don't pollute the universe or other planets. They wouldn't invade other planets or people on the other planets. We are not ready, and they would... The Theobans or whoever they warned us off wouldn't allow other kinds of ETs or malignant ETs, malicious ETs to invade us either. So I think people who really want to portray the idea or the narrative of the ET invasion or alien invasion are probably the special interest groups who want to get more fundings from the government. Because the military industrial complex, they need money. They need to create an enemy to make money and to get more funding. So people need to realize that.
And I know I said I wanted to wait to take questions after the break, but Lisa asked a really good one. Is this book in English?
Yes, it is English. Originally, Michel de Marquet wrote it in French and had a very good translator called Kay Smith. Translate into English, and I had a book translated into Chinese. It can be found on Amazon and on Google too.
Now, when you were talking about the military industrial complex and we need an enemy to fight so that economy can keep itself going, and everybody knows those stories. We were warned many, many years ago after World War II about this militarization of everything and turning it into a big business, which kind of pretty much has happened. So do you think that's what's going on right now with what we're hearing about UFO hearings in Congress and now the setup of this AARO or Aero office and David Grush coming forward? Do you think this is leading us into more funding for what people will think will be UFO research, but it's really making more advanced weaponry here for the states?
I mean, we have to distinguish the people who disclose certain information by two groups. One group wants to get more government funding and wants to create this kind of imaginary enemy, like the ETs. And I think that group is having an agenda. But there's another group that's more sincere, like Dr. Stephen Greer and others, who kind of realize that we have to evolve ourselves spiritually in order to be able to communicate or make direct contact with the ETs. In this book, The Oba Prophecy, it tells us that there were ancient civilizations that had very highly evolved people in the ancient past, the Lemurians and the people on the Atlantis continent. And back 14,500 years ago, people existed or lived on the continent. And this group of the ETs, the Theobans, made direct contact with them and appeared in front of them because they had a very successful and spiritually evolved civilization, and they were ready to communicate and contact the ETs from the Theobans, from Theoba. So that's why they were ready, but we are not yet. So we have to make us ourselves prepared and be ready for the contact.
Now, you did the translations into Chinese, and I'm just, from an academic standpoint, was that really difficult to do with a book like this?
It is actually the most challenging book that I ever tried to translate, because, you know, I work with a lot of lawyers and doctors. Those are just direct translations. But for this book, it contains so many details that sometimes the readers would contact me and say, you did this inaccurately and incorrectly, please modify it. So I have to make a lot of revisions even after the book was published in China and Taiwan.
Yeah, it just seems like that it would be very difficult trying to find words from one culture and language to be able to match another one. But how is it taken in China and Taiwan? How did they like the book?
I mean, the two states, the two countries have two totally different ideologies. China, the media is totally controlled, 100% controlled by the government. So this book had to be published as a science fiction, even though a lot of people believe what really happened to Michel de Marquet was true as described in the book. In Taiwan, it's published as a spiritual book and a religious book, kind of like crossover. And it's actually been really well received by the people in both places, both countries. So, and the book really does give a lot of spiritual guidance to us, and talks about the creation of life and the meaning of life. I can just summarize very quickly that
good timing on this one, because Janice just asked, do they give any spiritual guidance?
Yes. The meaning of life is that we are born in this lifetime just to accumulate spiritual lessons, so that when we die, when we give up our physical body, our astral body would gain the knowledge that we accumulated in this lifetime, and then to rejoin our higher self so that we can move up to the ladder. I can talk about a little bit more, in the sense that how we human beings come into being is that when God created every one of us, it inserted a tiny portion of itself to each of our astral bodies. So besides physical body, we also have our spiritual astral body, and God inserted a tiny portion of itself to each one of us. So we are part of God, and God is part of us. So when we encounter life challenges, we should look inside of ourselves for answers, and not to follow a specific religion or a specific politician. Because as what's mentioned in the Bible, the kingdom of God is within you. So we don't need to follow the priests or pastors in a church. We should follow our heart, our gut feelings, or what's inside of ourselves, through meditation, through prayers, or through having a good night of sleep. So this is a way to gain knowledge, to gain directions from our higher self, from our spiritual body.
Well, that seems very counterintuitive to the world we live in today, where it's like we're not here to gain spiritual essence and knowledge. We're more here to gather materialistic things and technology, which brings me to a point. I had asked you in an email before you came on the show about giving me one of your favorite quotes so I could make the thumbnail, you know, and put it out there. And you said this, you said, technology should assist spiritual development, not confine people more and more within a materialistic world, as is happening now on our planet. Care to elaborate and dig into that a little bit? That sounds very profound.
Yes, and really far-sighted. Remember, the book was written in the late 80s, and you can see now what's happening in the technology world, artificial intelligence, ChatGPT. And I think we have to realize that the purpose of life is to accumulate spiritual lessons. If you really read a lot of books written by people who have near-death experiences, you're going to know that they never regret that they didn't get the lottery. They never regret that they didn't buy that house that appreciated in value multiple times. What they regret is that they didn't really take care of their families well enough, or they needed to bond relationships better in their lifetimes. So this is what they're thinking about after they have this kind of near-death experiences. So relationship or spiritual lessons are the ones that they focus on, not materialistic aspects of lives. And we all die. And when we die, we don't take away any wealth, material wealth. What we can take away are the memories, how we did in this lifetime. And actually, when we die, we go through a life review process. We can feel how the others felt when we did certain things onto them. For example, if I hit someone, I would be able to feel the pain of the other person. So this is all projected, holographic form that we are able to feel the feelings of the other people. Technology, on the other hand, is actually moving us into the materialistic aspects of our lives. And I think we need to realize that technology is not all that bad. If we can redirect them into helping us to grow more spiritually. For example, if we are able to develop like an aura camera, a camera that can capture the human energy fields, we would be able to predict if someone is going to have any physical illness or not. We are able to tell whether a politician is lying on stage because the aura shows it. If you do some research on auras and people can read auras, you're able to know that the aura seers or the aura readers are able to distinguish whether someone is lying or not, or whether someone has malicious intents or not. So this is like technology can be a double-edged sword. It can benefit us spiritually, but it can also lead us to a more like a spiritual downfall.
You know, it's like any tool, honestly. I mean, you can use a fork and knife to eat your food, or you can also use it as a weapon. I mean, it's really up to having a well-rounded person that's going to be spiritually and mentally sound and have an understanding of life to know how to use these tools properly and to have respect for life. So, very interesting. So everybody, just real quick, we are joined tonight by Samuel Chung. He is the translator of the book, The Theoba Prophecy. And we are really getting into this deep and some really great conversations tonight. Michelle, did you want to jump in with any questions?
Well, Lisa's asking about reading auras. So asking, if it truly is a real thing and probably how she could find someone who would do that.
Yes, for those who are interested, by the way, this is a very important skill for people to have. People can read books written by Barbara Brennan. She was a former NASA scientist, and he wrote books, Hands Up Light, a trilogy. And she documented how she was able to see auras and read people's human energy field. And people can also look up a lady in Australia called Judith Collins, Collins. And she wrote a book, How to Read and Interpret Auras, and it can be found on Amazon. And there are people who can do that. My friend Roger in Los Angeles, he can do that. And I personally tested his aura reading abilities. So we went to like a place, you know, where people get government subsidies, like food, free distributed foods. And I asked him to see if he was able to tell anyone who is unique and different from the auras. And he handpicked a person and telling me that person is very unique, having a very kind of a bright aura. It turns out that person is a very accomplished photographer and who traveled to many countries in the world, financially stable and also spiritually evolved. And I tested his abilities time and time again and turned out to be extremely accurate. So people can read auras for sure. And if you look on the internet, you're going to see a lot of information.
Now I'm interested in what is going to happen with AI. And it seems that there's a lot of people who were involved with creating AI and really getting it moving that are now leaving their jobs and saying, hey, they need to put the brakes on. Is there anything in the prophecy about AI? You know, and I know this was written in the 80s, but there seems to be a understanding of how humans can advance their technology. We still are wondering about the Great Pyramids that are, you know, I think older than 14, 15,000 years. I think it goes way back to that first Atlantean civilization. We just can't find any of the tools anywhere. Those were wiped out or repurposed. But AI seems to be putting everybody on notice and on edge as to a potential danger. Is there anything in the prophecy about that? And what are your thoughts on AI going forward?
Well, the book doesn't really mention anything about AI. However, it talks about the dangers on Earth. Number one being money. Number two, politicians. Number three, journalists and drugs. Number four, religions. So it really depends how AI is used for us or against us by the special interest groups or if you really look at what's happening around us in the last few years or so, everything revolves around money and the politicians work for the special interest groups. So people need to really know what's happening behind the scenes. People need to have the knowledge and to so that they can respond correctly and appropriately when certain situations come up in the future. By the way, the book is not a book of prophecy, but a book of warnings from the ETs who have advanced technologies and advanced civilization. And it's not a book of prophecy because we decide our future. The future really depends how we make certain choices when we encounter certain situations in the future. The Theubans, even with their advanced technologies, their evolvement, they cannot predict what's going to happen more than 100 years ahead of time. They can only tell what's going to happen within 100 years or so, because we can change the future. The past is fixed. Actually, they took Michel de Marquet to the past about 14,500 years ago when the continent of Lemuria sunk into the ocean. But the future is changeable. We can change the future for the better.
The Atlanteans. I find that story fascinating. Now, my understanding is, and my belief by looking into physical things about Atlantis, is that these were an advanced people. Pretty much everybody back before the ending of the last ice age was pretty advanced. I mean, they had mathematics and, you know, we just can't find a lot of the tools. Now, is there any explanation in the prophecy book, the Theoban prophecy, that speaks to the Atlanteans and what level of spirituality or how were they risen? You know, how high up were you? Say we're a planet, a one out of nine on the scale. where were we before we had this encounter with whatever wiped out the last, you know, took out the Ice Age and all the megafauna and mammoths and saber-toothed tigers and all that, and left a few thousand humans running around?
Well, Atlantis existed a long time ago. There were actually two continents that existed a long time ago, about 250,000 years ago, actually longer than that. The more advanced civilization that existed was actually the Lemurians, who colonized the people on Atlantis. The Lemurians had a civilization that in which money, it didn't exist money at all. So people were highly evolved in the sense that they think about a greater good, the community, and no one took advantage of each other or one another, each other. And if they need something, they just grabbed what they needed from the marketplace. And there was no waste, and there was no money exchange. And people just were helping each other and had this kind of great civilization. And they had a very unique political system as well, in which the highly evolved people were elected to become the leaders. So there were no parties, no like parties like us. We have a Democratic and Republican Party always fighting against each other. They didn't have that. They had a king with six senior councils. So they had a lot of advanced technologies, and they built a very highly advanced pyramid in their capital, Casanova, on the northwestern corner of their continent. It is them who passed the knowledge to the people on Atlantis. That's why a great person called Thoth from Atlantis was able to build a great pyramid in Egypt about 17,000 years ago. So he had a knowledge of anti-gravitational technologies. And he was also able to use what they call the supersonic vibratory systems to cut the huge stones in a very precise manner. And he had the knowledge to align the huge stones in a perfect and precise manner, so that the Great Pyramid of Egypt was actually built as a tool to capture the cosmic and terrestrial energies, so that the users, like the ancient pharaohs in the past, could use it to communicate with people on other planets and to explore a parallel universe and to make rain. So the pyramid was actually and is actually an energy center, not a tomb for the pharaohs.
Yeah, they've never once found a body or any kind of legitimate writing in these pyramids, and they call them tombs because of the supposed sarcophagi, you know, that those big boxes are coffins, in other words. Is there any idea as to what those, like at Saqqara, the large black boxes that are underground? The granite boxes are amazing. They're beautifully shaped and polished. Any idea on what those were for or used back during their time?
Michel de Marquet wasn't shown what the use was, but he was shown how the pyramid was used by the ancient people. So back 14,500 years ago, as I mentioned, on the continent of Lemuria, there was a pyramid that's three times as large as the Great Pyramid of Egypt. And Michel de Marquet saw in a holographic form, actually he traveled past in time and saw like a holographic film or kind of a scenario environment, that two people were meditating inside of the pyramid, similar to what's now the King's Chamber. So they have a very deep meditation and concentration, and he actually saw the smoke coming out of the fingers of the two people, and the smoke actually went to the top or the tip of the pyramid, going straight high and straight into other planets, and he immediately knew that they were communicating with people on different planets. So that's how the how they were used.
You know, that's very interesting. Michelle and I are both teachers, and one of the classes that Michelle teaches is a mythology class, and she dips her toes into a little bit of
Egyptian
mythology. Michelle, why don't you give us a rundown on what our understanding is of Thoth or Thoth, and how he, you know, what he actually does, and let's compare to what Samuel knows from the Theoben prophecy book, and let's see what we have here. What's different? What's the same?
Oh, you've got to remember that I'm teaching seventh and eighth graders on a very basic level. They have no idea who Thoth is coming into the discussion. So, you know, it's kind of like the god of the wisdom, the all knowing. You know, all they know is, look, he's got an animal head. Well, there's more to it than that. So what do you
want to? Well, wasn't he the one that weighed the soul?
No, that's Anubis.
Oh, that's Anubis. Okay. See, I don't even remember. So, I mean, Samuel, you talked about the life replay and the, you know, at the end and feeling other people's pain, and that was handled by Thoth, right? Am I correct in that?
That's actually from the accounts of people who had near-death experiences. But okay. Michel de Marquis actually visited his past lives, his 80 past lives, briefly, and he was able to share some of his accounts and personal feelings and experiences when that happened. So we do have reincarnation.
So before we go on break, what about people that are here on this planet and, you know, get called psychopaths or sociopaths, and they have, you know, no empathy or very little, their brain chemistry seems to be off than the normal type of person. They don't feel the same. They don't look at people the same. Where do they fit in when it comes to past lives and, you know, being reincarnated and things like that?
Well, we do. I mean, we can use the example of Hitler. I mean, he killed so many people. But I mean, we have the life is a little bit complicated in the sense that before we are born into this lifetime, we are shown certain key events that's going to happen in our lifetime. But at the same time, we also have our free will. So it's a combination of predestination and free will that makes everything more interesting. So sometimes people forget what the life purpose is. And some people get affected by kind of technologies or special kind of incidents in their past lives or current lives. So we do have, so life is a very complicated combination of everything. But I can testify that people who can see auras, who can read auras, can immediately tell whether a person is a psychopath, or if a person used hallucinogenic drugs in the past, or if a person is an alcoholic, or if a person is a psychic. So they are able to tell from the human energy fields.
Okay.
I find that fascinating because my last group of mythology students, we actually had a discussion on prophecy versus free will. And it was amazing that 75% of the class believed in prophecy and could actually explain to me what it was as opposed to free will. So,
yeah, very interesting. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we have been joined by Samuel Chong, and he is the translator of the book, The Theuba Prophecy. And what we're going to do now is we're going to take a quick break for about 4 minutes, 5 minutes, excuse me, to stretch the legs, use the bathroom, grab something to drink, and Samuel, is that fine that you come back and we'll take some questions from the chat and we'll start to wrap it up?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm going to send you to the green room here in the back. All right, Michelle, so far we're having a great conversation. I see people coming and going in and out of chat. That's awesome. So thanks for joining us.
Definitely like to start off with Rick's question about what Samuel thinks about the man allowing the spirit to guide him.
Yes.
So and that kind of that ties in with what we just finished talking about, you know, the prophecy versus free will.
Absolutely. All right, everybody, we're going to do our quick about 4 minute break and we will be back shortly. Thank you.
Traveling near New Boston, Michigan? Hungry? Well then, you need to check out New Boston Coney and Grill tucked away at 37005 Huron River Drive. With daily specials, homemade soups and desserts, and a staff that makes you feel like family, you will not be disappointed. Give them a try for dine-in or carry-out at 734-606-5313. You can find their page, including their menu, on Facebook. Bon appetit!
All right, everybody, we're back. All right, that was a quick break. My gosh, but we are joined tonight with Samuel Chung, and he is the translator of the book from French and English to Chinese for the people of China and Taiwan of the Theoben Prophecy. So we're going to go ahead and bring Samuel back in. And Samuel, I want to start with my own personal question, and that is the technology that the Theobens use. Can you tell us a little bit about how that works? Is it anti-gravity? Are we getting close to understanding some of their stuff? And are we going to get the attention of some other species out there as we continue to grow our technology?
Well, we have to grow spiritually as well, because certainly I know that the governments in the world have certain technologies such as anti-gravity technology. And the Theobens really know how to use it very well by neutralizing gravity using a certain kind of vibrational frequency. And the Tibetan monks in the past had a musical instrument in which they played certain sounds that can move the huge stones up into the air, as documented by, I think, either Dutch or British travelers at that time before the Chinese Communist Party took over Tibet. So we have that technology now, and we also had the technology in the past. In terms of the Theobens, they used a different kind of technology as well. So they focus more on the vibrational frequencies of nature, for example, colors and lights. So they disinfected Michel de Marquet using yellow light and blue light. So I found a research paper by Harvard Medical School that certain wavelengths of blue light have antibacterial, antiviral effects. And also, just a few years ago, a research study by Chinese researchers, they documented like certain wavelengths of yellow light have antibacterial effects. So they used different colors for certain different things, And they also can combine hydrogen and oxygen molecules into water. So they are able to make purified water from the air. And they are able to communicate with Michel de Marquet using telepathy. They're able to perform all the miracles as performed by Jesus Christ, as documented in the Bible. They're able to levitate. They're able to kind of materialize objects. They're able to shrink themselves, and kind of like what Christ did, and to kind of transform, I mean, to change their appearance, and all of a sudden. They're also able to do a lot of certain things, like projecting illusions to certain people. They're able to kind of influence the actions of our leaders, politicians. Specifically, they prevented Germany from being the first country to develop the atomic bomb during World War II. And I did some research study on that. there was a German scientist called Dr. Heisenberg, who was far more advanced than the American scientists in developing the atomic bomb. But for some reason, probably due to the influence of our ET friends, he made a very stupid mistake. And a report was sent to Hitler indicating that it would be impossible for Germany to have so much raw materials to develop the bomb, to make the bomb. So Hitler gave up the plan. So that's what happened. So they sided with the US government at that time, because to them, the US government was more sincere in ensuring individual liberties at that time. So they have all the different technologies that we can think of. They also have weapons. They helped to disseminate or kill the gigantic animals or insects that were harmful to humans on a different planet. So they have all kinds of technologies we can think of.
Michelle, did you want to get into that question that
I
came
did.
From Rick?
Rick had asked a question earlier that says, what does he think about man allowing the spirit to guide him through life rather than man trying to train his spirit to become what man thinks it should be?
Well, I think... it really depends on whether you want to evolve faster or slower. If you want to evolve spiritually at the fastest pace or path, then you should follow nature and follow the heart, your heart, because your heart is connected with your higher self. By what I mean is that you can meditate or pray in order to follow the guidance from the answers of your prayers or your intuition, your gut feelings. That way you can make better choices in your life, because the choices given, the answers, the responses given to you will be the best for your spiritual development or spiritual growth, not necessarily your material advancements. So I have a very interesting example. Like, you know, I'm here in Los Angeles. There's a lady, a Chinese lady, who has kind of a psychic powers. She can see the internal organs of a person. And she had a dream in which a series of numbers were shown to her. She said she wanted to build like a temple for people to pray and to raise their spiritual levels. And so she asked her husband to buy the lottery and based on the numbers given to her in her dreams. And her husband forgot about that. It turned out that was the big price, the biggest price in the history of California. And it's actually, you know, she had the intent, but her actions might not follow her intent. That's probably why her husband didn't do that. Because she, even though she had this kind of psychic powers or psychic abilities, I'm her friend, so I know that after she gets the money, she might not follow her original intention. I know her.
Well, you know, there was probably something in my life that probably did the same exact thing, or at least in my mother's life. When I was really young, my mom used to work at a convenience store as one of her five jobs that she used to have as I was growing up. And there was always back in the day where you would collect bottle caps. I mean, we're talking like the early 80s. I was like 12 years old. And if you spelled out a certain word, you would win a prize. And the word that we were trying to spell and collecting bottle caps was for a 7-Up promotion. And it was, you would win $7 million if the caps you collected, each cap had a letter in it, if it spelled crisp and clean and no caffeine, because that was, you know, the 7-Up, you know, little logo at the time. Well, we had been collecting bottle caps and bottle caps and bottle caps, and we got so used to collecting bottle caps that I handed my mom one and I said, is this the one we've been waiting for? Because there's always just the one letter, the single letter that was hard to find. And she was like, no, 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 we don't need that one. You know, throw it away. Okay. That was the one we needed. we could have had $7 million. And because I asked her, I remember asking her like a few months later, like, we had that, didn't we? And you threw it away. And she was like, I don't want to talk about it. So I know the feeling of probably it was not a good time for having such money show up in our lives.
I really want to make one more point that sometimes people look up for the super wealthy like Bill Gates or Jeff Bezos. But if you really look at it from a more spiritual perspective, they encounter more challenges in their lifetime than us because they face a lot, tremendous amount of temptations like drugs and women and also the other kind of temptations that that would lead them into a different path. So that's a very challenged life to be in, to be the richest person or the super wealthy. If we look at a lot of the super wealthy or some of the big name families, and a lot of their children take on drugs. And the book talks about the dangers of using drugs, hallucinogenic drugs. And also, it's going to cause a lot when they reincarnate because it damages, the drugs damage their astral body, their higher self. So that's a very big danger to them.
Yeah. All right, everybody. We're in our second segment of the show where we're looking for questions from our chat room and things like that. So if you have a question for Samuel, please throw it in chat right now. I'm going to throw out another question about what you were just talking about with the hallucinogenic drugs. Oh, my God, if I could talk. There's been a lot of talk and research now getting done into like things like ayahuasca and these mind-altering drugs. I think they're more than mind-altering. I think they're consciousness-altering. And there are people who are using psilocybin and things like that for PTSD and, you know, those kind. Now, is there a point where that stuff is okay to use versus like the recreational? I mean, where do we draw the line? They come from nature. They help certain people sometimes, and then other times we see, you know, fentanyl and cocaine and other drugs out there that are just ravaging, you know, people and basically allowing them to commit a slow suicide. So what is your thoughts on that, and what does the prophecy speak to?
Well, the line is whether it is hallucinogenic or not. I look at a lot of evidence and I try to find a lot of evidence of the damages caused by certain drugs. All our readers, they're extremely accurate in predicting whether a person is going to have a physical illness or not. So I asked the aura readers a lot, what kind of auras are the drug users? They say that their auras look very ugly. And it's really something that I wouldn't want to give it a try, no matter what, because a few years down the road, they're going to see the effect. If you really look at the users of marijuana, they age much faster than the non-users. If people really focus on that and do the study, I know a lot of people in the spiritual community, they want to experience it. But in this book, The Uber Prophecy, it talks about the effects of that. Not only do they damage our astral body, our spiritual body, they lead us into a false paradigm, a false kind of scenario in which it's not supposedly something that we should experience because it's false, it's not real. We should experience the real life here and to gain spiritual lessons, so to evolve. But I mean, it's just my personal opinion. People can do additional research and draw your own conclusions.
So a question for you, because, you know, we're also huge fans of the paranormal. What is the connection with the Uber prophecy and, you know, people saying that they see ghosts or shadow people or anything paranormal?
Yes, the book specifically talks about ghosts. ghosts are actually the electrons from the astral body of the people who just passed away. I can elaborate a little bit more on that. When a person passes, the astral body leaves a physical body, and 81% of the electrons of the astral body goes back to the higher self after 3 days. So this is why Christ, after being crucified, he resurrected after 3 days. And this is why the Tibetans have a culture, a custom, in which the corpse of the dead are not to be touched for 3 days. So after 3 days, 81% of the electrons of the astral body goes to the higher self, reunites with the higher self. The other 19% remains in nature until either a person reincarnates or the electrons are recycled by nature. For example, goes into plants or animals or another human being. Because electrons have memories, so this is why ghosts frequently haunt places they loved or hated. And because of static forces, ghosts resemble the appearance or shape of the person who just passed away. So there's nothing to be afraid of or amazed at ghosts. It's just a natural phenomenon. If you don't want them to bother you, just use a lighter because electrons are afraid of fire.
Very interesting. Yeah, we've had some paranormal stuff, or at least I've had some paranormal stuff seem to happen. There was one point where after my mother's funeral, I had some flowers preserved, and we were looking at the flowers. They were in a small glass case, and I was looking at the handiwork of the person that did the flower the preservation for us. And as I moved in closer, I could smell cigarette smoke, and it was my mother's cigarette smoke. That's basically what killed her, was the smoking, and she got lung cancer and passed away. I would step back about a foot from this enclosure with the flowers, and it was gone. I moved forward to look close again, and I could smell it. And it was almost like a dome or orb of smoke in a non-smoking, I don't smoke, I don't do any of that stuff, in a confined area. I even asked my ex-wife, I was like, do you smell that? Go closer to it. And she did, and she smelled it, and she was like, oh my God, it smells like your mother's cigarette smoke. So, you know, that's just one of many weird things that I've had happen. So, yeah, very, very interesting. So, chat, anybody out there, you guys are being quiet tonight. Usually you guys are all fired up. Any questions for Samuel?
You know, well, Lisa asked a really great question. Mm-hmm. How does a person raise their vibration? You know, is it through gratitude?
Good question.
So.
Well, you know, this question can be answered by our readers or our seers, in which I asked already. Judith Collins, an amazing aura reader, and she says the best aura and the brightest aura that she has ever seen actually came from a Catholic nun who devoted her entire life in helping the poor, providing dinner and lunch for the people on the streets without any thinking about any payback or any kind of contribution from them or recognition from others. She was just totally altruistic and just devoted her entire life in helping the poor. So I think devotion and helping others is probably the best way to raise your vibration. And I also think prayers and meditation helps as well. And I think we should know that we are all created by the common creator, God, and we are all from the same source. So we should forget about divisions and our differences and help each other. And this is what makes our civilization great.
You know, I'm really fascinated with what you were talking about with sound. For many, many, many years, I studied martial arts, and I had a Japanese martial arts instructor, and he used to teach us certain breathing techniques. Now, what we studied was a form of martial arts called Aiki Jiu-Jitsu or Daitaru Aiki Jiu-Jitsu, which split off and kind of went its own ways and created Aikido, came from that, you know. But we studied the harder style with the sword work and all of that stuff. But my instructor at the time in Japan, he was very much an engineer, but very, very spiritual. And he would teach us this breathing technique. And all he would say is ah, oh, and n. And he would talk, and he taught us how to breathe. It was really fascinating. Like when we were to breathe, we were supposed to push our stomachs out and breathe by pushing our stomachs out and fill our lungs and our stomachs with air. And then we would, as we would breathe out, it would make this, we would basically make the sound of ah, oh, and n. And he said the first one was to, the vibration was to massage the heart. I think he said the ah. So you're like ah, right? And opening the throat and controlling the breath. And then it was into the throat with ooh. And then the last one was to the pituitary gland, he would say. And it was So you actually, when you make that sound, you can feel the vibration going through your head. Are these things that have been passed down from ancient times, from the teachings of the Theobans?
Well, the Theobans only help us indirectly by guiding us and showing us the right path on spirituality. Okay. I think the knowledge that you're talking about came from Atlantis or Lemuria, because in their civilizations, they knew all the rhythm and frequencies that could elevate the different chakras in our body. We do have six or seven chakras, major chakras, and we also have minor chakras. And sound vibrations do form resonance to our chakras. And I think music, different sounds, and also different colors of lights do have effects on our astral body or our spiritual body, which will affect our physical body. I think if we focus on increasing our frequency or our spiritual awareness, I think we're going to have better health in general, because as the aura readers all say, what's really important is our auras, our astral body, and because our astral body affects our physical body.
Yeah, very interesting. Michelle, are there any other questions out there? Doesn't look like it.
No, it's a quiet night in chat. You know what? What we could have you talk about is the scholarship.
Yeah, absolutely. And going across the bottom of the screen right now is the link to your scholarship page. And also, it is in the show description, and it is now in the chat room as well. Why don't you go ahead and speak to that before we head on out?
So as I learned the things that Michelle DeMarquet was not allowed to write in the book, I think we can change the future for the better. And the way to do that is to help the young people to know the directions that they should follow in their path. So mostly the young people, the students. So I came up with this A Better World Scholarship with my China Sona Foundation. So anyone who reads the book and resonates to the content of the book can write about it and to apply for the scholarship. Any student, whether it's a current middle school, high school, or college student, or who used to be a student, are eligible to apply for the scholarship. It's $1,000 each year, and the deadline is July 19th. And open to people from all over the world.
Oh, excellent. Very, very good. All right. Well, Michelle, I think we're going to start wrapping this up. So, Samuel, this has been a great conversation. Hopefully it will stimulate more people to think and talk about these things and pick up the book, The Theoban Prophecy or Theoba Prophecy. Where can people find you on the web?
people can find me on Facebook by searching my name, Samuel Chong, and also search on Google and the name of the book, Theobald Prophecy. And people can get the book on Amazon, or for students, they can just do a search on Google. They can find probably a copy as well. And I hope everyone can read it. What we have been discussing is only covers about maybe 3% of the content of the book. So there's a tremendous amount of information, and that can be really useful and helpful for your day-to-day life.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, Samuel, I am really interested in starting to dive into this book fully. And then once I do that, we'll send you an invite and we'll have you come back and we'll have a deeper conversation.
Great, great.
Awesome. All right, everybody. We were joined with by Samuel Chong. And once again, thank you, everybody, for joining us. Samuel, we're going to say bye. I'm going to send you to the back as Michelle and I do our closing remarks. Have a great night. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Michelle, great conversation.
It confirms a lot of what, you know, not only myself, but what several people in chat were already thinking as far as the higher self.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, just, you know, we hear a lot of these stories that resonate with people that have had abductions, and so much of this seems to be right at that same level. I mean, we had Dolly Saffron here who was telling us kind of the same exact thing. It was quite amazing. But all right, Michelle, I think we're going to head on out. What do you think?
Have a great night, everyone.
Have a great night, everyone. And remember, keep those eyes to what, Michelle?
To the sky.
To the sky.
You have been listening to the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters podcast. You can reach us at mi.ufo.podcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at @mi_UFO and join our Facebook group by searching for Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters. So until next time.